Hi, this is Dawn Newton, host of Open Air. Open Air can be heard every Wednesday at 5 p.m. on 889 KPOV High Desert Community Radio. We're also broadcasting and streaming live at kpov.org. Today I'm talking with co-authors Ted Haynes and Grace Vandevert McNellis about their new book, Vandevert, The 100-Year History of a Central Oregon Ranch. Tell me about how this book came about. Whose idea was it?
Grace and I had been working on the history of the ranch for some time and updating the website. This is a little story here, a little story there. And I realized how much material Grace had collected on the history of the ranch and the surrounding area and how much she knew. And it just occurred to me that we ought to write a book. So I that was in February of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Grace, would you like to do this with me? And she said, yes, you would like to do it very much. So we took some time. We did a lot of it by email between Gig Harbor and my house in California.
Oh, easy.
And Grace is a great writer. And so I fit what she wrote me into the grander scheme of things, or the grander scheme came together at the same time we were gathering the pieces. And, well, we're both very happy with the result.
Totally.
So, Ted, you've moved on to the ranch in 1996.
That's when we bought property, and we came back every year after that and finally started building in 2004 and finished the house in 2007.
And, Grace, you were born on the ranch in 1929.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about how the ranch was founded. I believe it was founded in 1892 by your grandparents.
Right. My grandfather had been born over in Cottage Grove. And when he was 16 to 18 years, he had uncles that took him out of Cottage Grove down, went to California. They roamed around. He did different things up until he was older. But one of his things he did in Oregon, he got in a survey group that came through, checking out how to put roads where the roads should go across the mountains, that kind of thing. And they came through what has now been. There was nothing there. The river is all, you know. Came out past Lava Butte and past the ranch. Walked along the meadows. He said, oh, I like those meadows. I'm not going to forget that. I want to come here someday and live. And he was still a young man.
He was a teenager.
Yeah, I don't know the exact, but yeah, he was just young, but saw these meadows and the timber. There was a lot of timber on the ranch at that time, both sides of the river. And then he gets involved in down in Arizona, Texas area. He went to work in Texas and met his future wife through a crazy situation. Was a teacher from Kentucky, had come down by train to go to work in the town he was in, and she got off the train. It was dark, and she needed a light to get to the house she wanted to go to, so she went up to what they called a shack, a railroad shack thing, and knocked at the door. It was my grandpa was there, a line shack is what they called it, and that asked if she could borrow a lamp. He says, well, what do you need? And so he said, I'll take you where you want to go. They got married about a year, I think it was a year later. Don't say anything like that. But anyway, and lived in Texas, had their first two or three children in Texas, and then went to Arizona, had a couple more, and then stayed there. And then, long story, Sadie was a lady, and she got tired of the range wars they had down there. And she and my grandfather would go out and help the ones that were getting injured in the street fights and so forth. He was working there and all, but there was a lot of awful activity that wasn't her thing. And it got to be pretty bad. There's stories about it. And so she said, I want to go back to New York and see my sister. She had a sister who was a teacher back in New York. Her husband was a druggist in New York City. They packed the kids. They had six at that time. And they went back to New York and stayed for a little over a year. Well, back in Oregon, My grandpa's two brothers were living near the ranch to the south of it and weren't available, and his father had come to Prineville. The mother had died, and they had come over to Prineville. And the boys wrote and said, that land you won is for sale. That land, it's here, it's ready. And so he wrote back to him, buy it for us. And then he put his six kids on the—well, he had one more child in New York City, Grace, another daughter. Excuse me, there was five went back. Grace was the sixth. And then coming home from New York to Prineville, my dad was on his way to being born. He was born in Powell Butte. And as soon as Sadie was okay, they packed a wagon. And my Uncle Bill, the oldest, led the cow, and they went up to the ranch and settled in. There had been someone there before, a couple of men, and there was some lumber. They were able to start a cabin. And that's how they got there.
And so Vandevort Ranch, if for listeners that aren't familiar with it, if you know Vandevort Road as you head down south, Highway 97, Vandevort Ranch is adjacent to Crosswater.
That's right.
And I guess it ends probably at South Century Drive as you head up towards Fall River.
Doesn't go quite fire that far
station.
South.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Before the fires.
And it crosses the Little Deschutes River.
Yeah, it's on both sides. Matter of fact, Grace's grandfather bought two parcels on the east side of the river and homesteaded two parcels on the west side of the river. He had to build a house on the western two parcels, but he wanted his house to be on the east side of the river because that's where the road was. So he found about the only piece of land he could that was barely in the western parcels but was on the east side of the river. And that's why the homestead is where it is today.
So how many acres total is Vandevort Ranch?
At the time we had it was 320 acres.
And now it's 400.
Yes.
Because when it was developed in the 1990s, they bought the additional 80 acres.
Now, Grace, you're one of five children.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit, too, what that was like, because you were born in 1929.
Yeah.
So you spent your childhood. It wasn't until, like, 1954 and 51, I believe, that you said.
Well, I married in 50.
Right.
And
so you spent most of your life
that's
on the ranch.
Well, a lot, yes. the golden years.
So I'm curious about what the day-to-day life was like for you, what your memories are of that.
Oh, my. I can remember from the time I was 3.5, 4 years old what life was like. A little sister was born a little after that, and I had an older brother who's 5 years older than I am. And we had chores to do every day. He had to go with our dad to milk the cows twice a day or whatever. He watched over things on the ranch. My mother and I were in the house. I wasn't all that much help at that time, but she did all the work in the house. She was a city girl from Portland and came to that house with no running water, no lights, and took over from her mother-in-law. They had come over there in 22, and the mother-in-law died in 24, so she learned the ropes and how to care for things because travelers would stay over. But I'm digressing back to theirs a little bit, I guess. But my days were just simply you did what you did. There was 3 meals a day. There was swimming all summer long. We went out in the morning, 10:30 or 11, and didn't come out till lunch. And then back in after an hour and played and swam, and people came. But the big thing about the ranch was it was a great gathering place for the family. Because the 8 children of my grandfather's were raised there. They were raised there. They worked that ranch as youngsters, so they always gravitated back in their later years and brought their children. So every summer we had my mother's family from Portland, and we had my dad's. The place was jumping all the time.
So how did they make, what was their living? Was it cattle?
Cattle.
Timber?
Cattle, and then when bad times happened, you sold cream, milk, you...
Tell Dawn about your friend, the turkey.
Yeah, we had the usual, a few sheep and turkeys and chickens. I once had a goat. I hated him. I didn't like him. But we had turkeys, and we had a turkey, hen house, turkey house. And no matter what I did, I would go out, and the gobbler would always chase me. I hated him, and my mother would say, "Don't go out there, Gracie, because he will chase you." Well, my cousin Barbara and I, she and I are, you know, she's still alive. We were laughing about it the other day. So what did we do? We went out and pestered the gobbler. And then he'd come after us, and my mother was ready to paddle us one time for doing it. I don't know. He never caught up with us, but...
What about transportation? How much time did you spend traveling to Bend?
Well,
or
now,
the Pine, I should say.
We went to school on the ranch. I did for 2 years. My brother went through his freshman year on the ranch, actually went to school through his freshman year. But then the curriculum wasn't enough for him, so we went to La Pine. My dad drove us up there until Claude was able to get a driver's license every day. Go up, take us up. He'd come home, come back and get us. That's the biggest part of I feel about the life that we led was our folks took such, were so careful that we got our education and nothing mattered except those kids went to school. And then Claude got his license and he graduated at La Pine when he was 16 years old. So he was still too young to get a job. So we took a correspondence course, or we went to Bend for an extra course in the high school there. And I went to Allen's school for 1 year and then transferred over to high school. Then Claude went on to other things. Other things happened then. This was the early days of the war. World War II, and so a lot changed. But the transportation, we always had a car. We always had a truck on the ranch to haul. But when I turned 15, the school district said, "Hey, you know, you have a right to get your daughter into school. It's a different district." They bought us a car. They bought a car for me. I got a driver's license, and I drove to school every day with my sister, who went next door to Allen's school.
So you graduated from Bend High School.
Yes, and that's how I did. I drove, and a lot of other things came along, but that's where I graduated in 47.
Now, I know the schoolhouse still remains on the ranch.
Yes.
Now, that who attended that?
Who
was all, was it just your family and your siblings?
Others. No.
Others from the community?
There were families nearby. Where Crosswater is now, there was families, two different ones that came there, and some close down the center. Once upon a time, the Shevlin Hicks and logging mills, the portable ones, they were just right out from the ranch, and they came there to the school.
Was it difficult to get a teacher?
Yes, in a way, because they had to drive from Bend, and in the wintertime, if the snow came, we kept them at the house overnight. We had a room for the teachers. That's what we did. But the Shevlin group, we loved them because they were just directly east of us. And my aunt Maud Catlow, Vandervoort Catlow, was a teacher for them also. And continued into La Pine for the first and second grade. She did worked up there.
Oh, I want to go back a little bit, too. When reading in the book, it's written that it's waking up one morning and looking outside and you see teepees out in the meadow.
Well, in a way, yeah. But sometimes we would just be sitting at the kitchen table eating and my grandfather sitting at this end and my dad at this end and the dogs would bark. And they were our doorbell at the ranch. And my dad would start to back up. My brother and my grandpa would just say that. It's just them. My dad say, "Oh, well, he knew what was going on. I didn't." I'm what's going on? And my grandpa would say, "They'll be all right. They'll wait for me." And I didn't know what he was talking, really. But the Indians would come every fall of the year and use the ranch for about 2 weeks as a place to go out and hunt deer, get the hides, And but to honor my grandfather, because they had known him from younger years, he could speak to them in their language, some of it. And he would go in the living room, and they'd all be standing there with their arms folded, not with headdresses or anything, but just standing there waiting for him. And I would peek around to see these men, and it was just awesome. There would be six, maybe seven men standing, and then I knew enough to leave them alone and come back out to the kitchen and stay out of the way. But they camped up above, along the fence line down to the river.
Where did they come from?
Well, we're pretty sure they came out of the Warm Springs area. I've looked, and that's as close as I can get. Because everybody that ever had anything to do with them, they're gone now. And even my brother isn't positive. They were kind of high desert Indians. They a little bit nomadic, I think. They went where the hunting was. But I think their base was back at Warm Springs, as far as I know.
So when they were coming on the meadow, I'm sure they were coming there when your grandfather, or maybe even prior to when your grandfather purchased it. How did that relationship get forged? Just an understanding? Do you remember anything about that?
Well, back in Cottage Grove, where my grandfather was born, his mother taught young Indian kids. And there had been a bad scene in the family. Her mother and herself, her mother was killed and her brother was killed in a massacre in Idaho. That's it's been written up, their story. And she was injured badly. But when she gets to Cottage Grove and marries my grandfather, she said she would never let that incident hurt taking care of the little Indian kids. So she had a school for little Indian kids. And so my grandfather was there and went to school, as were his brothers. And that's where they got acquainted with Indians. And I never heard my grandfather ever say a bad thing about them. It was always, they're great people. That was simply, if they'd have ever heard me say anything or my brother, they would have had a fit. They would have corrected us.
So was it just the men that were there to hunt, or
no,
did they bring
the women
families?
And the kids? And the children would come down at night to the house, and my dad would fill up a big jug of milk for them to take back, and they would bring a little baby papoose for me to hold in a cradle thing, and I was just fascinated with them.
Talk a little bit, too, about Chief Paulina.
I really, you know, only heard stories. We had a picture of him, and at one time they said we had the only real photo of him, but I don't know that. We gave it to the Paulina Lake Lodge because of Paulina Lake's name. We gave it to them. But he was a renegade Indian that from the Dalles, Maupin area, clear down, I don't know how far south of Lapine and down towards Lakeview, but he roamed, and he was bad. He shot people. I mean, he there was bad incidents. He wasn't a good Indian. And so then there's a story, and I haven't read it for quite a while, where I had a great uncle, James Clark, that was my grandmother's name. It was her brother. Had a ranch out of Prineville, and they call it the
Burnt Ranch.
The Burnt Ranch. And that's the Indians burnt his place, and then the Clark and Mr. Maupin from the town of Maupin heard about that together. Somehow they heard that Paulina was in the area. Somebody said they went after him and got him, shot him, and that was the end of that era. But there's some great stories that you can find about it, all the details. And I had a cousin who swore he had the gun that shot Maupin. Well, fine, you know. But he was just reading it. But they honored him with these names, Paulina Lake, Paulina Mountain, everything Paulina. And it's okay. It was okay with us. We were older. I didn't think anything about it, but... my dad always kind of wondered about it.
So did you ever run and have any issues with any of the Native tribes at all?
Never. Not to my knowledge. Anything to do with the ranching, no. I've never heard of anybody having trouble with the Indians.
Reading the book, too, and just looking at the lifestyle and the life you led, you and your family, it just seems so idyllic. Just such a great life that you had.
It couldn't have been better. And we didn't know things could be, like when I would go into Bend, nothing I loved more than bathrooms they had, and my uncle having a big bathtub that I could swim in and float in, and running water kind of thing. But none of us could wait to get home, to back to the ranch. It was a pull on the heart to go back home. And my dad, you couldn't move him off that ranch. The only time he was away from it was during World War I. He was gone for close to a year. And he also worked as an electrician for a while down near the Dalles to help raise funds for the boys for college, his family. And he had a chance to become quite, I guess, very good in electrician business out of Portland. He said, I just want to go back to the ranch. So he and his brother Bill, the oldest son, became ranchers. The other three boys became doctors. The girls became teachers. And Sadie, the mother, saw to all of that. She was the one that made them all see the light and do these things.
Well, I find it interesting, too. I mean, it really, just how domesticated we are today and how much we take utilities for granted, is that electricity was available in Bend for 31 years before it got to the ranch.
We didn't get it till I was gone. We had a power plant when my mother was still alive. We had a Kohler plant. You cranked it up. But then until Dad married Jeannie and they built the new little house, the little guest house, no electricity. We had it in the old house with the wires going through the rooms on the ceilings and a hang-down bulb. And we thought we were in seventh heaven. But the actual electricity was put into the little house, and the old house just sat there. It became quite decrepit. There's a lot you can do. I laugh about the people that buy water to drink. I said, you got to be kidding. Of course, we don't have the ranch water up where I live, but, you know, I just say you don't know what it's like to pump nice ice-cold water out of the well.
Talk about the winters. What were the winters like
for you? The winters were tough. They started like in November, we would have snow. Through Thanksgiving, we could be snowed in.
But you weren't wearing pants either.
No, we weren't.
No, you?
I had snowsuits, but no. I had long stockings.
And what about?
And garter belts.
The temperatures, too, and keeping the house warm.
I once saw it 46 below zero. And that was very unusual. But it would be 10 below. Heck, that was nothing. Zero. Heck, and 10 above. Well, gee, it was warming. I mean, it was really, really cold, but it was a dry cold. And if you were in the house and we had stoves.
Wood
stoves. It just radiated. Mm-hmm. And that's where you stayed. If, like when it was the 46 below, we didn't go out. Only my dad went out because you could feel your face freezing. You just, you know. Mm-hmm. So you learn to live with all that. We ice skated. We had great times pulling the sled behind the car. And we skied over to the schoolhouse. Things. My brother Dave, the younger one, even in later years, he built like a sleigh with a mast and went across a field against the wind and sailed across the field. Claude and I never had those ambitions. We just wanted to get to school or have something warm, you know.
So living on the ranch, you guys were very self-sufficient and self-sustained.
You had to be, and we were.
Did you feel the effects of the Great Depression?
I was born right at that time. My brother doesn't say much about it, but we always had food on the table. That's the thing that I've found most impressive, because it was a bad time for so many people. There was no money and things were scarce, but my mother had canned. They canned everything they could put their hands on. They took care of things for the winter time. And of course, we had animals. You could kill a sheep if you needed to, or a steer. And then you divvied it up with the neighbors and what have you, because we didn't have refrigeration. So you had to think ahead how to handle food there. No refrigeration at all. But we had milk, and we would send that out to the camp if they needed out the shelling camp.
You they just did what you eat. Had to do to survive.
Absolutely.
There's a quote in the book from Gracie's older brother, Claude, about the Depression. And he says, we were broke, but we didn't know it.
That's right.
So, you know, as Gracie said, there was food on the table, but as there wasn't much cash around.
No, there was. It was hard. Yeah. Excuse me.
What about communication, as far as whether it was post office
or telephone?
And so my understanding is that the ranch was it was a central hub. You didn't only just get the mail for yourself, but you got it for other people in the surrounding area. Is that right?
My grandmother did.
Yeah, I don't think that
the
was
old house.
Before Gracie's time.
That was 1900 era.
From 1892 to maybe 1910. It was a stagecoach stop because it was a full day's trip from Lapine to Bend, and the horses got tired, so they needed to change the horses. And the people probably needed a rest, too. And they put people up overnight because they could only go so far in a day. And it also served as a post office and a hunting cab. And they had even a blacksmith shop. I don't think that was a big source of income or anything like that, but they could probably shoe a horse.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You had all the equipment to do things, hammers, anvils, all the things you needed to help someone.
Highway 97, the Highway 97 that we know today,
still
is that
there.
Still the same original footprint from?
Pretty much, except way back, it was the one right out in front of the ranch.
What's now from South Lapine, Century.
The Huntington or whatever and that from Lapine, Highway 97, been there all the time I've known.
Talk about, too, about the holidays. I know Christmases were big at the house.
Well, it was if they could get there.
That was my question.
The family all came there if they were able to get there. The ones that grew up there, my aunts and uncles, came with their kids. Oh, yeah, the place was full. And
what about 4th of July?
That was huge, too, because we would have barbecues, and my dad would invite people from Bend. We had great friends.
What day is your birthday?
The 4th of July.
And I thought I read where you, for quite a while, you thought that celebration was all for your birthday.
I get teased about that every year. I just didn't know any different. And I just remember when I was probably 4 or 5, it snowed at the ranch on my birthday. It was snowing up there, a little bit, but it was snowing. And my dad says, well, we'll get out of this, Gracie. We'll go down to the pet parade in Bend and to the water pageant, all the good fun things they had going here. And I thought, we can still, still be my birthday down there. And then finally my mother told me that there were other things going on. And I thought it was great. I mean, okay, that's all right with me. Well, my sister was born the day before Christmas, so everybody's born on a holiday. No, not really.
So talk to you a little bit about Camp Abbott when the military came in. I believe in 1942, the U.S. Army requisitioned about 5,500 acres.
And they sure did.
That was right next to the ranch.
That was just down the road a piece, and they had maneuvers out from the ranch between our ranch and Highway 97. That was a whole new world, and where we noticed that the most to begin with was the highway. Going into Bend, here's all these army trucks coming with guys hanging out. And then we watched them build it, and we used to be able to go in and kind of watch a little bit when it first got started, seeing the barracks go up. And the big thing was to watch the Great Hall be built, because Colonel Besson wouldn't give leave to his soldiers until they got that thing up. and it was winter time, and so that was a biggie.
Now, did you interact with the military much?
Not at Camp Abbott. My dad became a civilian guard when they tore it down, and my brother was at the fire department there. My Aunt Dorothy worked at the hospital in Camp Abbott, and there was one other somebody that I know worked there, but I was still going to school, and but it was a whole new world for me, and I had to stay inside the fence lines. Couldn't ride my horse outside or my bike. Dad just said, you know, don't really want to be out on the road. Well, it was dusty and hot, and the maneuvers came and went from there, and they were interesting. I had never seen some of those soldiers that came. They were from the East Coast, and I'd never seen the Negroes, and they were wonderful. And one day, my dad and I are up by the barn doing something, and they're come down, they hanging over our ranch, over the gate into the place. We had some rail fences, but the gate, there was, you know, they were just hanging, looking. And all around the ranch were big signs, off limits to all military personnel. And they said, oh, we'll stay back here. And Dad says, would you like to come down in on the place? And they, well, yes, sir, but we can't. We're not allowed. He says, yes, you can, with my permission. You just can't stay here overnight with tents. Oh, okay. So they came down, and they wanted to fish in the river. So they fished, some of them. I mean, there was different ones, but he fixed them fishing poles, and they sat on the bridge. And then, though, one day, three guys, they stood there or came across. They wanted to ride the horses up in the pasture. And my dad said, well, those are just work horses. Those aren't riding horses. We don't care, sir. Could we please ride the horse? Dad's, well, they're just old plugs. They're just workhorses. We don't ride them. Oh, we would love to ride. We ride horses where we... So Dad, okay. So we found some ropes, made rope halters for them, and they three got up on the three horses and just around and around, just went crazy. They loved it. And my dad says, well, you need to be nice to these people because they're a long ways from home. Because he was at Fort Dix in New Jersey during World War I. So he was so lonesome. He said, I'll never forget how I miss my family. And so he said, we'll be nice to them.
So I also read, too, that there was a prisoner of war camp. Either for real or suspected.
For real.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my dad saw more of them than I did. He saw them, the actual prisoners. I found out later that I guess there were a few Japanese, but it was and they were Italian. They were, you know, the Italy bunch. You know, they left the war early. They shipped them over here. And Dad saw the Italians. But I know that Italians were the one my dad saw the most of because he tried to talk to them. And, we couldn't. And they were right there by the big bridge there on the south end of Sun River now that goes west towards Mount Bachelor.
Sun River that we know today, your dad played a part in helping develop that or naming some of the roads in there.
Well, he knew the people that developed it. They became friends. They had meetings, and they would ask questions. And Mr. Gray was the one I know of. I was gone then. I was not around here, but Dad would write, or he would tell me about it, and just that he says, well, I gave him some names for streets. They wanted to know what was local. Like what was a sagebrush called, or the lupin, or the, you know, the birds that were there. And so they named in the first bunch of...
How did he feel about that development?
Oh, the Ben people had a fit. that's just going to get all those California people coming up here and taking over. And my dad said, how could they possibly do anything but improve where all that sand and sagebrush is. Because, you know, it just sat for a long time between World War II and when Sun River came. There was 10 years more. The only thing that was used was the Great Hall. The Elks Bend owned that. They had partied up there once in a while. But Dad said, they can't hurt this place. And, of course, he and Jeannie thought it was great.
So what remains at the ranch today?
Well, the homestead, the log homestead, has been rebuilt. And with very much the same footprint and the very much the same design as the 1892 homestead. And it's on the Deschutes County list of historical places. So that's very much there. The schoolhouse that was built nearby and moved to the ranch in 1929 is still there and has been restored. I mean, it looks very much the way it did, but it's very nice on the inside. You could hold class there today. But it has electricity and a bathroom. It didn't used to have those things.
That would have been neat when I went there. But it went.
Yeah. And, of course, the river's the same.
A little bit of Uncle Bill's cabin is still out in the woods side. My uncle, the oldest, was going to homestead and never got it finished. Long story. Mm-hmm. And remains of that.
Mm-hmm. That was on the 80 acres that the developer added to the ranch.
Right.
In the 1990s.
Fort Dix.
And part of the old wagon bridge is there. It's now a dock.
Yes.
It doesn't go all the way across the river.
No, and it was a little later in the story. The old footbridge is long gone.
So, Grace, was there any regrets or second thoughts when you went to sell the ranch?
No.
And then as it got developed, what did you think of the developing?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful, but I had relatives that were having kittens over it.
It was sold in 1970, but it wasn't really developed or changed a great deal until about 1990.
Yeah, 87, 88 is when the first people bought it, and then 90 was when it started getting developed. And
I think they've done a fabulous job honoring the memory.
You have no
maintaining
idea.
The integrity of the property and the homes. Tell us about the homes that are built there. They're all log homes.
Exactly. And that's inspired by the homestead, which, of course, was a log home. So all the homes on the ranch are mostly log or log and timber. And it's very unique, as far as we can tell, in the West, that while there are other log homes, certainly,
there's
one cohesive development where every house is a log home, and every house will have to be log home. Some great architects have designed these houses and done a great job. Janet Jarvis is a well-known architect who's designed quite a few of them.
Now, I know, Grace, you come back to Bend every year since you left.
I have. Uh-huh. Knock on wood rot next year, but we'll see.
Yeah. So we're talking about 55 years you've been coming back since you left. What are your thoughts about Bend? I mean, each year you come back and you see...
Oh, I love to see Bend, and I brag about it all the time.
How do you feel about, I know, some of the personal belongings from the ranch house and of the family is at the Historic Museum as it stands today.
Yeah.
How does that feel for you go through there?
That's okay. The old house had its day, and my dad kept everything just like it was until he was gone. He did donate some things to the store because he was in on it in the beginning when it was down there on Greenwood and Bond Street, across from the bus depot, whatever the bus depot is. the trail. But anyway, and then they came here, and they've got a thing upstairs of some of it.
So when you go through the historical museum and you see those belongings and, you know, that's the table you sat at or the saddle or the churn or those things, how does that make you feel knowing that
hundreds
of people
good.
That go
I'm
through
glad
there.
That because Dad had such fun making that table. He told me how he made it and that kind of thing. I just look at it and think, yeah, you did good. He made it so I can reach across to get a biscuit or something if I want. He made it a certain size.
Now, what do your children and grandchildren think of the history?
They're wild about coming down, but it's not the same now for them. Grandpa's not there anymore, and Jeannie. Mm-hmm.
So what has the response been about the book? How is that?
Great.
Well, it's been very good. People we know who have read it have been very enthusiastic about it. Said they've enjoyed it, and the most convincing thing to me is they finished it.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to fake that.
That's right. That's right. They actually read through it.
We've gotten a lot of good reviews from newspapers all over Oregon. We've sold a bunch of copies, We've paid back the printing costs.
Good.
So I'm glad. I guess another critical thing is it's 5 months after we published it? Nobody's told us there are any errors in it.
No, they haven't. Nobody
That's very satisfying. We were careful.
It is.
We were very careful. We tried to be very careful, not just make things up or put in what we kind of thought probably happened. But nobody said there's anything wrong with it, which is great.
Now, I know, Gracie, you had said that your family or extended family members weren't real happy with the sale of the ranch or the development. What have they said about the book?
They love the book. You know, Gracie sat out and did it for them. and they're passing it on to their grands and great. I brought some, and I thank you for my future grands and greats that they will get to read this. I said, well, I think it's important they know where they came from and know some of the story of the ranch, because it's fascinating. But I didn't know that until 20 years ago, maybe, that people really cared that much about the history of all this. And then...
Is any of this overwhelming to you, Grace?
Oh, it well, what is overwhelming, this has been, at my age and what have you, it's been a joy to have something to grab my hands onto and do and still contribute, you might say, or still be of use, because it's what makes me get up in the morning and keep going. I have no complaints. I think it's good for a person to keep their mind.
Well, we've enjoyed doing it.
Are you surprised by the response? I mean, even just my telling you what an honor it is to be talking to you and how fascinating I find the story. How does that make you feel when you hear that, not only from myself, but other people that are hearing your story?
It's a good feeling. I have good feelings. I'm one of these people that's pretty low-key, and I'm not a person that finds fault in things. If I don't like something, I just keep still, because there's some good stuff out there. Keep the good things in mind. That's the way I feel.
What would your parents think of the book?
Oh, my mother, she was an avid reader. My dad would have been very, very proud. I was kind of his daughter, you know. My younger sister, very close too, but we had a real great relationship, and he'd been very proud. Wouldn't have said a lot, but he would have been. I loved him dearly, and he was a great dad to me.
And I know we were talking earlier, too, just our own KPOV studios is on the back end of what is known as the Boys and Girls Club today, but it was the Bend Athletic Club. Back in the
day. Yes, there sure was a Bend Athletic.
You swam here and you danced here.
We danced in the gym. That's where we held our proms and all that stuff. But here in this building, we sang upstairs. We had the band room up there and the choir, all that, and music rooms.
And you went to Bend High, which is now the Bend Lapine School District, the administration building. And then your little sister went to Reed School, which is now the Deschutes Historical Society.
Exactly.
So when you come back and you see how these things have changed and evolved, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's just Bend is growing, and they're growing well. They kept the downtown, as far as I'm concerned. I like to come back and see the familiar buildings. Mm-hmm. But Bend seems to be doing fine.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in.